Welcome to the CCA edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the cholangiocarcinoma community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent with Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the 25th World Congress on Gastrointestinal Cancer in Barcelona, Spain. Our guest today is Professor Lorenza Rimasa, an associate professor of medical oncology at Humanitas University and Humanitas Research Hospital in the Italian city of Milano. Professor Rimasa has published more than 200 articles on the development of new GI cancer treatments and biomarkers. She's associate editor for the Journal of Hepatology, section editor-in-chief for the Disease Biomarker section of Journal of Personalized Medicine, and an editorial board member of several journals, including Liver International, Therapeutic Advances in Medical Oncology, Cancers, and the Journal of Hepatocellular Carcinoma. So we're here today to talk specifically about cholangiocarcinoma and the prospects for treating this very rare and extremely aggressive disease. Buongiorno, Lorenza. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So cholangiocarcinoma has been a focus of this conference and, of course, has been around for several years, but it seems that therapies are coming up all the time to treat this disease. And from what I understand, there seems to be some hope now that didn't exist before. Can you explain the current state of treatment?
Cholangiocarcinoma is a rare disease. It represents 3% of gastrointestinal cancers, but it's increasing, especially in Western countries that in the past had the lowest incidence. The problem, we have different problems with patients with cholangiocarcinoma. There is a lack of awareness of the disease, so in most of cases the diagnosis is done at advanced stage when the therapeutic options are limited. In other cases, patients are diagnosed earlier and they can undergo surgery, but in most of cases, eventually they relapse. What has changed in the last years is that until a couple of years ago, we had only chemotherapy for patients with advanced disease. Cisplatin, gemcitabine in the first line, FOLFOX and other combinations in a second line. More recently, the biological characterization, the molecular profiling of cholangiocarcinoma has been partly discovered, and we learned that patients with cholangiocarcinoma may have some molecular alterations in the tumor cells that can be the target for some new drugs. And the other important novelty in this field is that the combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy works better than chemotherapy.
Let's go back a second. You mentioned that the incidence of cholangiocarcinoma has been increasing in Western countries. Now, we know that some of the highest rates in the world can be found in Southeast Asia. For reasons of contamination with liver fluke and other environmental factors. But why is this disease increasing in Western countries?
That's a very good question. In Western countries, it's the intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma that is increasing, and this can be related to two factors. First, a better diagnosis, because in the past, the most common primary liver cancer, that is hepatocellular carcinoma, can be diagnosed only based on radiological criteria without a biopsy. So in the past, the diagnosis of HCC was done in almost all the cases according to radiological images without biopsy. But nowadays, we know that some of those, called HCC, were not HCC, but they were cholangio. And nowadays that we biopsy most of the patients with liver cancer, almost all the patients, we know that some of them have cholangio. So this can be not a real increase in incidence, but the increase in incidence is related to a better diagnosis. The other point that is responsible of a real increase is the metabolic syndrome in Western countries. So in Western countries, people have diabetes, they are overweighted or obese, they have hypertension, dyslipidemia, and all these factors are associated to the development of intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma.
So this is basically lifestyle factors that can be controlled.
Yes, it is a lifestyle factor that can be controlled.
Okay, so what it sounds like is this is largely due to an increase you said obesity, maybe other factors, alcohol, smoking. I don't know if that's a major factor here.
Yeah, it could be.
Lack of physical exercise.
Yes. All these, let's say, non-good lifestyle habits can be associated. We know very well for hepatocellular carcinoma. For cholangio, we are learning this, but we know that at least some of the intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma are related to lifestyle factors. Not all, every cholangio, but some of them.
And generally, this is a disease that doesn't strike until the 60s or 70s, correct?
Yes, correct.
But you do see early onset as well.
Now we see early onset cholangiocarcinoma. We see patients in their 50s, but we also see patients in their 30s or 40s.
Really?
That was something that we were not used to see in the past. And we don't know what is the reason, at least so far.
As you said, it might be better diagnosis or it just might be lifestyle factors as well.
Probably both factors are involved, and there are ongoing studies that trying to better characterize especially or in particular patients with early onset cholangiocarcinoma.
At this point, is a diagnosis of cholangiocarcinoma a death sentence?
So in the early stage, it is not, because a few patients can be cured with the surgery and adjuvant chemotherapy. But in the advanced setting, at least so far, the answer is yes. In the past, the overall survival, was short. Now, thanks to the new therapeutic options, the survival has been prolonged.
How much, more or less, a five-year survival rate?
The five-year survival rate is probably, in the advanced setting, less than 10%.
So this is still a pretty poor outcome?
Yeah, it is a very poor outcome for patients with advanced disease.
Now, just a question. It seems at this conference, there are a number of Italian researchers specialized in cholangiocarcinoma. Is there any particular reason for that?
No, it is not. I think that we had a lot of experience in hepatocellular carcinoma, and then considering the increasing incidence of cholangiocarcinoma and new therapeutic options in the advanced setting, then we started to treat also patients with cholangio, and then running clinical trials, be involved in translational trials, and so then in the end, some of us became expert in cholangio.
Now, there are also some possible genetic factors at play here. One of the posters spoke about the BRCA mutation and its role in possibly predicting a diagnosis of cholangio.
Yeah, it is. The BRCA mutation is associated mostly to other cancer types like breast cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancer, but we now know that also a small fraction of cholangiocarcinoma can be associated to BRCA mutation. And once again, it's important to do molecular profiling of the tumor and, if needed, a genetic evaluation of the patient, because if we identify a specific alteration, so for instance, also BRCA mutation, we can first evaluate the genetic risk also of relatives and the other members of the family, but we can select which is the best treatment according to the different genetic alterations that we can identify.
Right. Last year, last November, the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. Approved a treatment for cholangiocarcinoma, durvalumab, also known as Imfinzi, developed by AstraZeneca. How significant is this?
This is really significant. I was mentioning that a new option is the combination of chemotherapy and immunotherapy. This durvalumab is the new first-line standard of care in combination with chemotherapy. So in the past, we had, as a first-line treatment for patients with advanced disease, gemcitabine plus cisplatin, so chemotherapy. Now the standard of care is cisplatin, gemcitabine plus durvalumab. And we know that combining durvalumab with the chemo, we can improve the overall survival, the progression-free survival, and the response rate of the regimen. So patients live longer and have more responses. With a safety profile of the combination that is very good, and a quality of life that is not impacted by the addition of immunotherapy.
Right. So on the TOPAZ-1 phase 3 clinical trial, it showed that 25% of patients treated with durvalumab plus chemo were still alive 2 years later, compared to only 10% of those who had received chemotherapy alone.
Yeah, this is the important point. As I was saying, there is an improvement in survival, and thanks to immunotherapy, we have patients who live long. And actually, now we know that it's 25%, but we don't know, because we don't have enough follow-up of the studies recent, if patients may live even longer.
I see.
But this is a completely game changer in the treatment of patients with the cholangiocarcinoma.
Okay, so here at this conference, a lot of focus was given to biomarkers and to potential new therapies. What can we expect, let's say, in the next 2 or 3 years?
This is another important point. We already know that for patients with cholangiocarcinoma, it's important to do a molecular profiling. We know that patients may have some alterations like FGFR2 gene fusions, IDH1 mutation, HER2 amplification, or BRAF mutations, or other alterations. This is important because these alterations are the target for targeted agents. For instance, we have already approved both in the US and in Europe some drugs for patients with FGFR2 gene fusions like pemigatinib or futibatinib. In the US, also a drug for patients with IDH mutation is approved that is called ivosidenib, and so other drugs for the different alteration. It's a mutation in one of the gene, and it's associated to a subgroup of intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma. And now we know that we have a drug that is active against that mutation. So patients who have an intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma with IDH1 mutation, then they receive the first line treatment already mentioned with chemotherapy plus immunotherapy, but then can receive a specific targeted agent. So in the future, the hope is to find other targets. We know that approximately 45% of the patients may have a potentially actionable targets. We don't have drugs for all of them, but we hope that in the future we will be able to identify more targets, and the hope is to have more drugs to that can be effective on specific targets.
What about the 55% who don't have potential targets?
For those patients, after the first line systemic treatment with cisplatin, gemcitabine, and durvalumab, there are chemotherapy options. We know that we have a FOLFOX, we have another regimen with a drug called NALIRI, we have FOLFIRI, so we have chemotherapy options for patients who don't have a specific target.
Mm-hmm. Just curious, how many Italians have cholangiocarcinoma?
Actually, I don't know the exact number, but again, as mentioned, it's a rare disease, so it's a smaller number compared to other cancers like colorectal cancer or other, but it's important to have a consideration for patients with rare diseases.
And what's interesting is that, at least in the U.S., the rate for colon cancer is dropping, and that's probably through better detection and screening starting at age 50. There is no way potentially to screen for cholangiocarcinoma?
Unfortunately, at least so far, there is no way to screen because we don't know which is the population at risk. We know that the lifestyle factors we mentioned, we know that in Eastern Asia we have the liver fluke, we know that chronic hepatitis can be associated, but we know just some of the risk factors. So we are not able to identify the population at risk, and we are not able to define which is the best screening tool. So, for instance, for colorectal cancer, it's easy. You can search for fecal occult blood test, or you can go for an endoscopy, colonoscopy.
Yes.
For cholangio, it's difficult. The ultrasound can be non-diagnostic. You cannot offer CT scan to all the people. So I think we need to better identify the population at risk and to identify which is the best test that can be used for screening. And if we succeed in these two aspects, then it will be possible to implement screening programs.
Thank you. We're just about out of time. We've been speaking with Professor Lorenza Nuasi. Thank you very much, and we appreciate your time.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.